This is Audible.
The Land, Alliances, a Lit RPG Saga, Chaos Seeds, Book 3, written by Alaron Kong, M.D., the father of American Lit RPG, narrated by Nick Podell. The Light Court. The king retired back to his private room. The royal chamberlain followed him and they left the other denizens of the Light Court behind. The room was not just four walls, a floor, and a ceiling, of course. When the door closed, the two powerful beings were effectively alone in a shard universe of the king's own creation.
"I have instituted the first phase of the plan, my king. I am curious, however, why you did not want the High Chancellor or the rest of the court to know."
The King of Light stood silently on a balcony. In front of him was a sea of raw chaos. Most beings would go mad just staring into such primordial soup for more than a few minutes, but the king gazed unflinchingly. Hours passed with no response, but what was that to immortal beings? The chamberlain waited patiently. When the king finally spoke, the chamberlain heard something he had never heard before in his liege's voice. Hesitation.
"Those weaklings are not worthy of knowing my thoughts. Also, it would not be prudent."
"What does it matter what they know, my king? You are the strongest being in creation. That is why I serve you." The King of Light just nodded in response to his chamberlain's Machiavellian reasoning. There were no illusions as to the nature of their partnership. He was quiet for even longer this time. He searched for answers in the sea of gray chaos which had seemed more turbulent of late. When he spoke, it was softly.
"Once that was true, my chamberlain. The universe, though, is shifting in its slumber. I feel that none of us are safe anymore."
Chapter 1, Day 90, Kuralt 9, 15,368 EBG.
"You need to get more sun, Randy."
"My lord." He stood up quickly and bowed. "No one told me that you were back."
Sit down, Richter said. "That's certainly what I plan to do."
He plopped into one of the chairs in front of the desk.
"There was a lot that I need to tell you. It looks like we're at war. In addition, Hisako tells me we can start expecting more monster attacks. And last but not least, there was a plague of giant insects called the Scourge that we need to eliminate ASAP. Before we get into all of that, though, Hisako said there are some things you need to tell me."
Randolphus's eyes grew wider and his expression more incredulous as Richter spoke. The last seemed to take the wind out of him, though, and he dropped back into his chair. The chamberlain opened his mouth and closed it several times before speaking. "These eaters certainly are well known and widely feared," Richter thought to himself. When Randolphus had composed himself, he said,
"You are correct, my lord. There are several things we need to discuss. The first, however, is what you want to do about the prisoners. We can't just continue to keep them under lock and key."
Richter just looked at Randy with a befuddled expression. "What prisoners?"
The chamberlain took a deep breath.
"In the weeks that you have been gone, the hunters have begun to notice people traveling along the western border of the mists. It appeared they were searching for weak spots in the enchantment. I ordered the hunters to observe them from within the mists. One night, a hunter got close enough to overhear them talking. The news wasn't good, my lord. They were mercenaries hired by Count Stonek."
"Okay," Richter said. "So how did we get to having prisoners? Did the hunters attack?"
Randolphus nodded. "One night, our hunters did shoot at them, hoping to thin their numbers, or at least frighten them away. The mercenaries started firing back blindly into the mists. At least one was a magic user. Our people had to avoid both arrows and offensive magic. One of the hunters was struck in the shoulder by an errant crossbow bolt. The injury was not life-threatening, but after that I ordered our people to simply observe. The truth is, my lord, our hunters were not equipped to attack a well-armed force. They continued to follow them from inside the enchantment. After a few days, two of the mercenaries wandered into the mist and became lost. The hunters were able to catch them."
"Good,"
Richter said in a strained voice. His tone barely concealed the truth. He was pissed.
It apparently wasn't enough that the Count had both emotionally and physically savaged Isabella. It wasn't enough that he actively partook in the slave trade. No, Count Asshat apparently now felt the need to come after a few non-humans that had escaped his clutches. Richter was furious that the man was threatening his people. Of course, if Richter were being fair, he would have to admit he had infiltrated the Count's home and spelled his guards and then robbed the noble blind, but on the other hand, the guy was a total asshat. Richter controlled himself. So, we caught a couple of mercenaries, huh? Well, I can't say that I'm completely surprised that the Count came after us. How many were there total?
I'm unsure as to the total numbers, but the hunter saw less than 10,
Randolphus answered. 10? Richter asked, confused. What was that supposed to do? Even if they could penetrate the mists, what did the Count think 10 fighters could do against 300 of us? Were they all very high levels?
I cannot speak to the capability of those that remained outside of the mist, my lord. Mage Zar knows a spell similar to your analyze skill, however. He was able to tell us that one of the trespassers was indeed a professed warrior, level 28. The man would have been formidable in battle. The other prisoner was underwhelming. She is only a girl at level 6 at that. Her name is Natoska, and she has been quite forthcoming. She said that she had been hired by the mercenaries to guide them through the woods. That is actually how the two found themselves in the mists.
What? Richter asked. A lover's quarrel?
Randolphus looked uncomfortable. Of a sort, my lord. I will tell you what we have discovered, but please bear in mind that the following information has been obtained from prisoners, and so should be held suspect. The warrior, Orvin, told us that the Count paid for a divination to find you. That was apparently unsuccessful, but he still had an article of Isabella's clothing. He was able to get a weak reading that she was in this general area of the forest. I am quite frankly surprised that he was not able to coerce our location from any of the ship captains that brought us from Eve. I can only surmise that the Count had not found any of them yet. But I digress. As I was saying, the mercenaries hired the girl as a woods guide, telling her nothing except that they needed to get to this general area. From what the guides said, the men were not kind once they were away from civilization. When she saw that the men were afraid to enter the mists, she took her chance to escape.
So the girl was a victim in all of this? Richter asked.
He felt a bit bad about his off-color joke now. I cannot say that definitively, my lord. All I know about her is that she arrived with a small company of invaders. That fact does not engender my trust, no matter what story of sympathy she tells.
Richter nodded. He wouldn't second-guess his chamberlain's instincts unless he had a damn good reason. It had not been too long ago that his lack of concern over the village's defenses had led to the bugbear attack, an attack that had left several of the villagers dead. He wouldn't be cavalier about the security again. Those goblinoid fighters had been more than a match for the average villagers. Come to think of it, how had his hunters subdued a level 28 warrior?
He asked that very question to Randolphus. Once the two were in the mists, the hunters simply followed them until they wandered deeper into the enchantment. When our people finally attacked, they were smart enough to use the magic to their advantage. They would pick shots of opportunity at the warrior. He would try to attack one of our people, but the hunter would retreat until the enchantment took effect again. While he was chasing one, the other hunters continued to fire. Though he was armored, the damage added up. One struck the warrior in the back of the knee, causing him to collapse. After that, he surrendered. The hunters made him strip off his weapons and armor and then hobble a short distance away. Once he was unarmed, it was a simple matter to bind him. Warrior or not, without armor to protect him, the hunters could have easily ended his life. The girl offered no resistance at all. She cried out in surrender as soon as the battle commenced. While being escorted back, she just thanked the hunters profusely. She was apparently grateful to be free of the mercenary party's extra demands.
Richter smiled. He was proud of his people. They might not be able to beat a well-armed band in a head-to-head matchup yet, but they had used their heads and still snagged a win. When he had left to unlock his second power, he hadn't planned to be absent for long. Ultimately, though, he had been trapped in that dungeon for more than 2 weeks. He was delighted that his village had not only survived and thrived, it had defended itself. Okay, so we caught these two, Richter said. Now the warrior seems a bit tough, but still, I would have thought the Count would send a small army to get revenge, if he was going to do it at all.
The mercenaries were most likely meant to gather intelligence, my lord, and perhaps harm you if possible. Noble or not, the Count's coffers are not bottomless. Fielding an army, even a small one, is not a cheap undertaking. I'm not surprised that he is using a small skilled group to attack you. He could not have known about the protective enchantment around the village. 10 fighters would have been more than enough for a night raid. They could have caused a large amount of death and damage among the non-humans before fading away again.
So the question is, what do we do with these two now? I don't really have a problem just letting the girl go if she was just hired to do a job. Even if she talks and tell others where the village is, that cat is probably out of the bag.
Randolphus looked at Richter in confusion. He shook his head. Damn idioms.
He tried again. I mean, the damage is already done. The other mercenaries might already be on their way back to the kingdom. We were never going to be able to keep our location a secret forever. I'm surprised one of the ship captains didn't sell us out too. As for the warrior, though, Richter continued, I'm not sure what to do yet. I'll talk to Yoshi about persuading the man to tell us anything else he hasn't shared yet.
My lord, Randolphus said in a cautioning tone, I'm familiar with the type of persuasion the Sword Adept employs. Mercenary guilds wield a fair amount of power in these lands. All who live by the sword accept that they may die by the sword. If it is ever discovered that a mercenary was tortured after he had surrendered to you, however, then there might be far-reaching consequences. At the very least, you would not be able to hire mercenaries if you ever had the need in the future.
Richter hadn't really thought of that. He might need to hire mercenaries soon. He had just been told by Hisako that they had found a bugbear camp. It would be great to hire more fighters for the upcoming battle. Hell, he might need to hire some fighters to deal with the Eaters. So if we let the guy go, would it make it easier to hire mercs in the future?
Perhaps, my lord, Randolphus said thoughtfully. But I would caution you against putting faith in such men and women. Most cannot be trusted to stand fast in a bad situation.
I won't be paying for trust. I'll be paying them to fuck shit up. I just need to know if they will fight if I pay them to.
Then it is a fine plan, my lord. There are some guilds that have, if not honor, then at least the intelligence to know that they need to honor their contracts. The Kingdom of Eve is also not the only place to find mercenaries. The dwarf clans of the Serrated Mountains are strong and have been known to trade their hard steel for bright silver.
Hisako had told him he needed to speak with the dwarves anyway.
He would just have to find a way to grease the wheels. Okay, I'm guessing that Basil left while I was gone, Richter said.
Then a thought occurred to him. Did the mercenaries...
No, my lord, Randolphus said. I had the same concern, but the warrior knew nothing of our trader, and he left a good week before they were first spotted. Taking the riverways with the ship you arranged, he should have been safe enough.
Well, when he comes back, we will have to send him right back out again. I want to commission at least one group of fighters and have them back here as soon as possible. I'm assuming you know about the various mercenary guilds of the kingdom. Tell Basil whatever he needs to know to pick the best. We will also need to send a second group to the dwarves. I'll ask Crom if he has any insights on the best way to approach his people.
Richter looked his chamberlain in the eye with a grave expression.
Our enemies are multiplying. I have already told you about the 2 large threats we are facing from the bugbears and the eaters. Now we have to worry about the Count's little mercenary band and whatever else he plans to throw at us. To make matters worse, Hisako just told me that we can expect the monsters and creatures in the surrounding lands to become more powerful. We need help.
Richter sighed, hating the words that were about to come out of his mouth. Prepare a budget of how many men we need and how much it's going to cost me. I was able to bring back some treasure which should hopefully cover the costs.
I will prepare everything, my lord, Randolphus said, jotting down some notes.
But that brings us back to the original question. What do you wish to be done with the prisoners?
Richter sighed again. He really didn't want to have to deal with this when he was just coming home. What he really wanted was to take a hot bath and then sleep in a bed for about a month straight.
Richter squared his shoulders, though.
Duty first, he thought. Okay, let's deal with the warrior first. Is he in the building I saw outside with the guards?
Yes, my lord. I had the builders erect the 2 shacks in the center of the village.
We are keeping them guarded day and night.
How long have they been here?
They were brought into the village about 3 days before you arrived, Randolphus replied.
Well, let's get this over with, Richter said, getting back on his feet. I need to stop at the Treasury and Armory first, though.
Randolphus organized the papers on his desk into whatever system he seemed to use. To Richter, the piles of notes just seemed to be randomly allotted to an empty space, but he wasn't about to judge how his chamberlain conducted business. The job got done, and that was all he needed to know.
Richter walked out of the room and over to the Treasury. Holding his mark up to the glass circle in the door, he then heard the sound of massive bolts being drawn back before the sturdy door swung open. The shelves of the Treasury were just as bare as they had been before, but he set about changing that. He unloaded all of the jewelry from the Tephanim Queen's vault. He then started removing the bars of metal from his bag of holding as well. It was laborious to remove them one at a time and then take the time to stack them. He had to actively resist the urge to turn the bag upside down and shake it. Richter was pretty sure the magical fold in space that let the bag hold so much didn't work like that, but it sure was tempting to test the hypothesis. Removing all of the bars, high steel, moonstone, cobalt, and quicksilver, took longer than he thought it would. He was happy he had taken the time, though, because his bag of holding was definitely lighter afterwards. Richter had to admit that seeing the stacks of metal filling his treasury made his heart happy. It was clear and tangible evidence that his village was growing in wealth and potential. They might not be stacks of gold bullion, but the metal in these pyramids would make stronger weapons and armor for his people. That was definitely a form of wealth in the land. He placed the bars of elementum on a shelf, and then took one ingot of each metal and placed it back in the bag. He had a quest to finish, and he planned to make his magic forge just as soon as he was done talking to the prisoners. After pulling a few more items out of his bag, Richter walked out of the vault with a lighter step. It's amazing what unloading hundreds of kilos off of your back can do for your posture, he thought. Even if the bag did reduce the weight of everything by 90%, losing dozens of kilos of weight was a welcomed feeling. Randolphus was waiting patiently outside of the treasury. Richter had given the Chamberlain access to all of the rooms except the vault that held the village's wealth. Randolphus had never seemed offended by the decision. The man was well-versed in the whims of rulers after having spent decades in the halls of power serving as the old King of Eve's Chamberlain. Of course, if Randolphus had been offended, Richter probably would have never known. The older man was too professional and polite to mention something like that. The next step was the armory. When Richter opened the door, he was pleased to see that Crom and Randolphus had indeed been through the room. The cobwebs had been removed, at least from near the entryway. The weapons, too, had been polished and set in orderly rows against the walls. Walking up to an empty table, he started unloading all of the non-magical equipment from his bag. All of the weapons and armors from the drow were placed there for his people to later clean and catalog. He told Randolphus to make sure the hall was organized into what could be salvaged, what could be used for parts, and what needed to be scrapped. The Chamberlain jotted the order down on one of his papers, and that was that. Before they left the armory, Randolphus pointed out another small table. It had some armor and a few weapons on it. He told Richter that these were the items and equipment from the mercenary. You have found steel hauberk, defense plus 8. Max defense plus 9, durability 34 of 40, item class common, quality average, weight 8.3 kilograms. You have found steel helm, defense plus 4, durability 25 of 25, item class common, quality average, weight 2.1 kilograms. You have found studded leather pants, defense plus 4, durability 19 of 20, item class common, quality average, weight 1.9 kilograms. You have found pointed steel-tipped leather boots. Defense plus 3. Durability 9 of 10. Item class common. Quality poor. Weight 3.7 kilograms. Traits plus 1 damage to kicks. You have found iron club. Damage 7 to 8. Durability 19 of 20. Item class common. Quality average. Weight 3.1 kilograms.
You have found Steel Dagger. Damage 7-9. Durability 15-15. Item class common. Quality average. Weight 0.7 kilograms. You have found Coin Purse. Weight 0.5 kilograms. Next to the mercenary's gear was a wooden short bow and a quiver of iron arrows. A short dagger was laying under the bow. Randolphus said those were from the woman. Outside of a small coin purse, clothes, and some non-magical trinkets, she had nothing else. He hadn't seen the need to take any of that from her. Richter was surprised at the level of gear the mercenary had been carrying. None of it was horrible, but he would have thought that a professed warrior of a relatively high level would have better equipment. True, a sword was just a sword. It was the person wielding it that made it dangerous. But an enchanted sword or high-quality armor could definitely turn the tide of a battle. It also looked almost new, lacking the dents and buffed-out scratches he would have expected. Well, just one more thing he would ask the warrior about, Richter thought. The two men left the armory, walked past the great seal and down the tunnel leading to the outside. Not one to waste time, Randolphus continued speaking to his lord about a million and one little topics and decisions that needed to be made. Used to Randolphus's efficient manner, Richter just kept answering at a steady pace. Yes, no, or quite frequently, I'm sure you will handle it well. Just do what you think is best. When Richter pulled out the new magic core, though, and asked what his chamberlain thought he should do with it, the man stopped walking.
Banished gods, please put that away, my lord. I have been getting an earful every day since you left. Craftsmen, tinkers, builders, they all want one. Crom has hidden the call you gave him because he is afraid one of the other villagers will take it. Though you were missed for many reasons, my lord, high among them was that I assumed when you returned the call would finally be used. If the villagers get wind that there is a second of these devices, it will start the whole cycle again. Please, keep it secret.
Jeez, Richter thought. Randy looked stressed. The man was sweating. Richter put the magic core away again, if only to ease his chamberlain's nerves.
Okay, okay, it's gone.
Randolphus's shoulders visibly relaxed. I still need to know what to do with it, though. I don't think just making another magic forge is the right choice. Feels too much like putting all of our eggs in one basket. Richter realized he had spoken in idiom again. He was going to rephrase when Randolphus assured him that he followed this time.
What I'm saying is, come up with an idea for me.
The man nodded and made another note on his clipboard. As they walked, the various villagers greeted them and said hello. Everyone seemed happy, but Richter wanted to know for sure. He accessed the city interface and saw that loyalty was at the same level that it had been before. Morale seemed to have dropped by 20 points, though. Remembering the potential drop in morale after the bugbears had burned down the longhouse, he asked Randolphus how long it had taken to rebuild the longhouse. The chamberlain thought for a moment and answered 11 days. It was what Richter had thought. There had been a 1 week grace period to rebuild, but after that, morale would have dropped by 5 points per day. Satisfied that nothing was amiss with his village, he occupied himself by checking his status while they walked. They arrived in front of the two guarded shacks. The buildings were nothing to take pride in. They were really just planks driven into the ground vertically, with more planks nailed horizontally to keep them together. The roof was comprised of even more planks nailed together and topped with a coating of tar. There was at least an inch of space between the joints. The prisoners could at least enjoy a well-ventilated space. Probably hadn't made the rain too much fun, though. Richter stopped walking, and Randolphus motioned to one of the guards. He lifted a simple wooden crossbar and opened the door. A well-built man was in the process of standing up from a pile of damp straw that must be serving as a bed. The sky was still overcast, and the inside of the wooden box was draped in shadow. Richter cast simple light, and a ball of light came to hover above his head. It was a benign spell, like the name implied, but his casting served two purposes. It allowed them all to see, and it specifically allowed the prisoner to see that he was dealing with a caster. The magic he could command, coupled with Richter's armor and weapons, might throw the warrior off of his game and make him think twice about making a move. If the man was discomforted at all, though, he didn't show it.
I need to take the initiative, Richter thought to himself.
So, you're one of the guys that was sent to kill me, huh? How was the trip through the forest? Richter put a false sense of cheer in his voice.
The man just stared back. Even wearing only a pair of simple cloth pants and a basic shirt, the warrior exuded a sense of menace. A cruel smile found its way onto the man's face, and Richter knew that he was looking at a true enemy. Even if the mercenary had never been hired to come to the Mist Village, Richter knew this warrior was someone he wouldn't want standing behind him. He analyzed the man. Name: Orvin. Human, level 28. Health, 720. Mana, 130. Stamina, 590. Disposition, distaste. Humans are one of the shortest-lived but most prolific breeders in the land. Humans have a broader affinity for skills than other races. No special bonuses to race. Humans get 4 points to distribute per level. Profession, warrior. Keeping his expression cheerful, Richter clapped his hands and said, "Okay then, bye." As he was walking out, he said to the guards, "No food or water until I say otherwise. He can suck rainwater from his clothes. If he makes a nuisance of himself, call Yoshi and the other sprites over. They'll bind and gag him."
"What?" the man said in a shocked voice. "That's not necessary."
Not giving the merc any more attention, Richter kept talking to Randolphus. "Like I said, if he keeps up that noise, gag him. I'll be back to speak with him again in the morning after he has had time to wipe that stupid look off of his face. Now, let's go see the woman." The guards threw the crossbar back onto the door. Richter heard a kick thudding against the inside of the shack and the wood planks shuddered. He was in no mood for either games or invaders that wanted to have temper tantrums. The Chaos Seed walked back up to the hut and looked through one of the slats. The mercenary made eye contact and they stared at each other for a long moment. Richter started speaking in a soft voice. "Listen up, shitbird. I hate rapists. I hate you in particular. So much so that if you kick that door again, I will burn out your left eye. You are one taint hair away from having an eye patch as a permanent fashion accessory. So go ahead. Open that dickhole you call a mouth again. See what happens." Richter kept his voice even the entire time. Part of him wanted Orvin to challenge him, and part of him didn't. The part hoping for confrontation was thinking about how the mercenary deserved punishment. The part of Richter hoping that Orvin stayed quiet was afraid that he might actually enjoy burning another man alive. Whatever Orvin saw in Richter's eyes convinced the mercenary to back away from the wall and sit down on the damp straw. Richter watched the warrior move away, and his own body shuddered slightly with unrealized violence and adrenaline. He took a deep, calming breath before shaking his hands out twice and moving to the other shack. Randolphus and the other guards stared at their lord with serious and cautious expressions. Richter told the guards to remove the other crossbar. The ball of light above his head followed him into the room. What greeted him wasn't a defiant warrior, though. The inhabitant of this guard shack was a waif of a girl. She was a blonde-haired woman of slight stature. Her brown shirt was too large for her and was cinched with a heavy belt at her waist, leaving the top loose. He could just make out a simple wooden necklace underneath. She was wearing brown hide leggings and matching brown moccasins. The young woman was sitting on her bed of straw, looking up at him with wide, frightened eyes. He thought about what she must be thinking. She must have seen him through the walls. He had gone inside of the other shack for barely a minute before coming back out and threatening the man with beatings and food and water deprivation. Then she saw him threaten to maim a complete stranger just for kicking a wall in frustration. This all occurred only a few feet away from where she had been huddling down onto her straw pallet, probably hoping that the scary man wouldn't come over to her shack as well. Richter immediately softened his expression and went down to one knee. He analyzed her so he would better know how to address her. Name: Natoska. Half wood elf, half human. Level 6. Health 130. Mana 110. Stamina 160. Racial blends are erratic in their disposition. They can end up with some or none of any of their parent race's characteristics. Richter thought. Natoska was the second hybrid that he had run into. Maybe Yoshi could relate to her, but he would try first. "I apologize for just bursting in here so loudly. I also apologize for any ill treatment you have received since you were brought in by my hunters.
Have you been mistreated?
No, my lord,
she stammered. Please, he said soothingly, just call me Richter. She was still cowering in the far side of the hut, so he lowered himself to the ground, looking her in the eyes. I heard what the mercenaries have done to you. I am so sorry. I want to explain what is going on here. My village suffered a brutal attack less than a month ago. That is why security measures have been so harsh. I promise that soon we will escort you to the boundaries of the mist and release you. Is that what you would like? She just nodded. Is there anything else that you know about the mercenaries? He asked her. Are there more coming? Did they discuss the Count's plans? She shook her head and then started shaking more violently.
No, my lord, she said in a whisper. For the first few days they didn't say anything, and then after that they would just take me one after another. Sometimes more than one at once.
She broke out in sobs that almost broke Richter's heart. He half reached out to comfort her, but thought better of it. She probably didn't want any part of a man's touch right now, no matter how well-intentioned. He stood to go, not wanting to bother the poor girl any further. I'm sorry, but you will have to stay under guard until you are escorted out of the village. But I will have some better bedding and blankets brought to you. He was walking out of the door when he heard her ask,
What will happen to the man that I was captured with?
Richter had already made that decision, so it was not a difficult question to answer. His voice was dark and heavy with meaning. You won't have to worry about him again. The door closed, and the crossbar was put back in place. He heard her crying softly inside of the hovel, and he hoped that they were tears of relief. Chapter 2 Day 90, Kuralt 9, 15,368 EBG. Richter looked around. When he had first come back to the village, dawn was just breaking. His villagers had still been mostly asleep, but now the village had awoken and everyone was moving around. Word of his return seemed to spread like wildfire. More and more of his villagers came to greet him, some laughing, some cheering, but all decided to barrage him with questions. After 5 minutes, he could barely hear himself think. A gruff voice came to his rescue.
Get back, you vultures! Let the man breathe! He didn't fight through monsters for the past 2 weeks just to fight through you turkeys! Get back before I knock you into next week!
Crom, the newly appointed and official smith of the Mist Village, elbowed his squat and powerful body through the crowd.
I'm sorry about all this, your lordship, the dwarf said loudly. It seems everybody in this village has forgot they have jobs to do.
He looked around fiercely, and most of the villagers backed away, cowed by the gruff blacksmith. Soon only Crom, Randolphus, and a gnome were still around. Richter looked around for Tirad, but didn't see him. It wasn't overly surprising. The love of Tirad's life was still recovering from an emotional trauma. Since the growth of the quickening, she had been spending time beneath its boughs. Tirad said it was helping her to relax and hopefully heal. He was probably up there with her, in the meadow just north of the village. The gnome wasted no time speaking.
Lord Richter, I know that you plan to use the magic core to make a forge, but that is a large mistake in my opinion. The core should instead be used to make a philosopher's crucible. We would be able to make the most powerful potions and powders in the River Peninsula, perhaps one day in the entire land.
Taken aback by the impassioned speech coming from the gnome, who Richter only vaguely remembered and recognized, he asked what seemed to be the most logical question. Who are you again? The wind seemed to be taken out of the gnome's sails as his shoulders slumped. Before he could answer, Crom interjected,
It do no matter who he is, your lordship, and it do no matter what you think, Bane. I done told you 50 times over the past week if I told you once. The lord here has decided to make a magic forge.
Richter opened his mouth to add to the conversation, but Crom spoke up first.
And more than that. If his lordship wasn't going to make a magic forge, he wouldn't waste a magic core on what is basically just a fancy way to make wine.
The dwarf started muttering to himself.
Probably couldn't even make a decent ale with that cauldron thing, so what good is all your potions and magic-y elixirs?
His voice rose again as he clapped Richter on the shoulder.
You tell him, your lordship!
Richter opened his mouth to speak a second time, but again, Crom started on a ranting discourse that focused on the foolishness of gnomes who couldn't even be trusted to grow a beard. Bane wasn't some shrinking violet, though. He was puffing up his chest with the clear intent to start shouting down the dwarf when Richter decided he had had enough. If he was being honest with himself, watching the two short men, one bespeckled and portly, the other muscle-bound and bearded, about to come to blows, Richter just wanted to shout, "Cripple fight!" The only reason he had let Crumb's tirade last as long as it had was because in his mind he was trying to figure out which of them would say, "Timmer!" It was time to get back to business, though, and overbearing or not, Crom had a point. He put his thumb and forefinger in his mouth, curving both slightly, and whistled sharply. The gnome and dwarf looked up at him, surprised, seemingly having forgotten that he was even present.
Enough!
Van, Crom is right. The production of quality arms and armor for our village is the primary concern. We must be able to defend ourselves. Seeing the gnome's crestfallen look, Richter decided to throw him a bone. I am interested in this philosopher's cauldron, I believe you called it. Jot down the important points and get it to Randolphus here. He and I will discuss the idea and will decide its merit. Bayon opened his mouth to protest again, most likely to argue that once the magic core was used, then there wouldn't be any point to talking about the cauldron anymore. Richter just held up his hand to forestall the argument and told the gnome to have faith. Looking over, Richter saw Crom with an overly smug expression on his face. Seeing that smarmy grin, Richter couldn't help responding to that as well. And Crom, I'll thank you to let me speak for myself. If you are so obsessed with what I have to say, then you can give up your position as village smith and become my secretary. Richter raised his voice to a yell at the end, not because he was actually angry, mind you, but because Crom seemed to respond better to it. With a pull on his beard, a chastised Crom bowed his head slightly.
Of course, your lordship. Didn't mean to speak on your behalf.
Feeling that everything was right with the world again, Richter looked to Bayon one more time. Please find me after the evening meal. I believe you are our most senior potion maker, and I will need your help with the project. Bayon nodded his head in near pantomime of Crom, but then corrected Richter.
Alchemist, my lord.
What? Richter asked, confused.
I am an alchemist, my lord. The skill is called alchemy, and it actually covers the making of potions, salves, powders, medicines, and other useful items. Alchemist is the correct term.
Shaking his head at the bald and officious gnome, Richter just decided to take another tact. He analyzed the gnome. Name, Bayon. Arcane gnome, level 9. Health 130, mana 400, stamina 110, disposition friendly. Arcane gnomes are obsessed with knowledge, increased dodge and sneak, gifted in magical arts. Bonus to intelligence each level. Arcane gnomes get 3 points to distribute per level, and each level gives +2 to intelligence. Richter raised an eyebrow. That mana pool was more than respectable. It was almost the same size as his, and his level was twice as high. Of course, Bayon would have gotten his racial intelligence bonus of 180 mana points, but that still didn't explain all of it. Why is your mana level so high? He asked. Are you a caster? Bayon's face froze a bit before answering.
No, Lord Richter. I always wanted to learn to cast, but I don't have any affinity for it, unfortunately. I invested points into intelligence, hoping that I would one day be able to cast some type of spell, but I was never so lucky.
Richter's eyes narrowed slightly as he regarded the gnome. The man was clearly lying. He was deciding how to proceed when Crom spoke up again.
So, your lordship, do you have something for me?
The dwarf was rubbing his hands together in gleeful anticipation. His smile was somewhat hidden behind his black beard, but Richter still saw the flash of white teeth. Richter continued to stare at Bayon for a second, somewhat enjoying the fact that the gnome was now squirming under his scrutiny. Richter didn't mind his people having their own private lives, but he hated being lied to so blatantly.
It was most likely because he personally enjoyed lying so much and really didn't appreciate it when people didn't take the craft seriously. He decided to put in one more dig before just getting Randy to investigate the gnome. Yes, Crom, one moment, though. Bayon, I see that you are only one level away from being able to get a non-combat profession. We will be making groups of fighters and casters to hunt in the surrounding area soon, and I will personally be tackling some of the lower levels of the catacombs. I think you would be a great addition to the team. Bayon's eyes grew somewhat wide.
I'm not a fighter, my lord. I don't think...
Nonsense, Richter said, cutting him off. You can just hang in the background. Perfectly safe, but you will get experience from the kills, right? Good, it's settled. Crom, let's make our way to the smithy. Richter started walking away with the village's smith in tow, effectively ending the conversation. His recent experience with Yoshi had taught him the truth of Hisako's words. There was no better way to get to know someone than in combat. After Richter had put a bit of distance between himself and the gnome, he leaned towards Randolphus and said, "See what you can find out about Bayon. His mana pool is fairly large, and he's clearly hiding something. Also, get me a list of our best fighters. I plan on doing some scouting around the area in the next few days, and I want several teams of five. There should be two casters in each group for support. And tonight, gather everyone at the quickening." Randolphus nodded along with each order. Crom hadn't spoken again since Richter told him to wait, but the loud dwarf was not known for his patience.
"Well, what have you got, your lordship? Were you able to find some cobalt?"
Richter smiled. He was really enjoying dragging this out. It was Crom, after all, who had put him on the spot a couple weeks ago. The dwarf had asked him to either get the medal or basically punk out in front of all of the other dwarf smiths.
"Simmer down now! We will talk when we get to the smithy,"
Crom grumbled, but seeing as how they would be there in just a few short minutes, he let the matter drop. Richter heard the clanging of metal on metal once he got closer to the blacksmith's workshop. The structure was very rudimentary. It was more a series of stacked logs with a roof than a proper building. It was four-sided, but there were also multiple large openings that let the air flow freely through the smithy. It helped to combat the intense heat of the forge and smelter. The floor was laid stone. When the trio walked in, they saw two dwarves hard at work. One seemed to be making a sword, and the other a woodsman's axe head. A third was by the smelter, breaking rocks with a sledgehammer.
"What's he doing?"
Richter asked, indicating the last dwarf. Crom gave a grunt.
"To get the iron out of the ore, we have to remove the impurities. That be what the smelter is for. We get a better result if we break up the ore into small pieces first. That be a large part of what we've been doing since you've been gone, your lordship. That be how we've been able to make all of that."
Crom gestured to the back of the smithy. There was one four-foot-tall pyramid of blue high-steel ingots, and two more pyramids of simple steel. There were even two small piles of dark iron and dull bronze. "Have you guys been working non-stop?" Richter asked, impressed.
"Well, your lordship," Crom replied, "it isn't often that we get large amounts of free time and get paid for it. Now, some of these sluggabugs thought that they should just use the time you were gone to just sit around and drink ale, but we negotiated."
He finished with a grin. One of the dwarves at the anvil glared over at him. Before the dwarf turned back to his work, Richter noticed that he had an almost healed black eye. Richter gave his smith a clap on the back. "Where are the others?" There were at least three other dwarves with some smith training in the village.
"Either exploring or mining. We've had to do it ourselves since you left. Those mist workers have been sorely missed. Now, my lord,"
Crom said with some impatience and irritation,
"what did you bring back?"
Richter smiled, still enjoying dragging this out. He reached towards his bag of holding, but just before putting his hand in, he stopped as if he had just remembered something. Crom ground his teeth together. "What does the difference in metal really mean?" Richter asked. "I mean, I know you said that it could make stronger weapons, but what do higher-level metals actually do? What do the metals that you have here do if they make a forge?" Crom visibly calmed himself.
He had caught on that Richter was playing with him, but since slugging his liege lord was probably not the best idea, he had to play along. After a long, suffering sigh, he answered,
"We've been checking just that, my lord. That's why we took the time to make those bronze and iron ingots. All you need to do is hold the core and an ingot near an anvil, and it will give you the information about the type of forge that would be created."
"You would only need one ingot for that?" Richter asked. "Why did you make a whole stack of iron and bronze?"
Crom shrugged. "We had the raw ore, and like I said, we had some time to kill. Also, we weren't sure if higher or lower quality ingots would make a difference. Depending on the purity of the smelting process, the ingots can affect the quality of weapons or armor that are made with it. Didn't seem to make any difference. I didn't let them make too many bronze ingots, though. I figured you could sell the copper."
"You found a copper mine?" Richter asked, excited.
"Sorry to say that we didn't, your lordship," Crom replied. "Just a small vein in the iron mine. It was strange, though. The miner that found it swore he had been in that particular shaft just days before and hadn't seen anything except rock and iron."
Richter still smiled at hearing that news. He couldn't be sure, of course, but it looked like the level 2 benefit from the quickening was already helping the village out. It specifically made it 25% more likely to find rare resources, while at the same time increasing the yield of already discovered resources by 25%. Copper wasn't exactly a rare resource, but it was still money in the bank. And besides, the copper gave him an interesting idea. He looked over at Randolphus with an inquiring expression. The Chamberlain understood the unasked question.
"The copper is in a locked chest in the armory, my lord."
He checked his clipboard. "That was item number 312 for us to discuss."
Richter shook his head in irritation.
Eager to do anything that would keep Randy from dragging him back into his bottomless hole of honeydews, he walked over to the ingots. He grabbed one ingot from each pile. A check showed that all of the ingots were above average quality or better. Richter asked Crom about it.
"That's the other reason we made so many ingots, my lord. If I'm the village smith, then this is my smithy. And in my smithy, we won't have inferior products. So if someone makes an ingot that is average quality or worse, then we re-smelt it until they do better."
Richter smiled again, knowing he had found the right dwarf for the job. Enough stalling, though, he thought. Even he was eager to get the forge made. He asked Crom for the core. The dwarf called all the other dwarves over from their tasks. After a few minutes, they stopped what they were doing and walked over to an anvil. Richter and Randy shared a confused look. The dwarves each grabbed a corner of the large anvil and, with grunts all around, picked it up a scant inch. They moved to the side together before placing it back down in the center of the smithy. Crom then reached into the top of his shirt and pulled out a key that was strung on a chain about his neck. Richter and Randolphus walked closer, and they saw that a space had been hollowed out under the anvil's previous location. A metal chest that had the blue gleam of high steel had been set into the hole. Crom reached down and lifted the chest, before setting it down on the ground and inserting the key to open it. Once he threw the lid back, Richter could see that the magic core rested within.
"This here is the other project that has been occupying my time since you left, my lord."
"Abrams and Whedon, Crom! Who are you protecting this from?" Richter asked. He was glad that the core had remained safe, but it seemed a bit overboard. Except for the prisoners that had been brought through the mists, the only other people here were fellow villagers.
Crom pfft. "I wouldn't trust any of these jackanapes. That enchanter kept going on about a creation table. One of the human builders keeps droning on and on about a golem, and Bane was not the only annoying gnome that I've had to deal with. Basically, every one of those little bastards has an idea about what the core should be used for. Weapons, force shields, stasis net, summoning circles, gah! They've been driving me crazy!"
Randolphus gave a cough that sounded surprisingly like, "Told you." When Richter looked, though, the man was just holding his clipboard, looking innocent. Richter squinted one eye at his chamberlain, but the man remained unflappable. Shaking his head, he said, "Enough! Let's do this!"
Richter took the magic core from Crom and then walked over to the anvil.
He set all of the smith's ingots on the ground except for the bronze. He held the core in one hand and the copper-colored ingot in the other and placed each on the anvil. A prompt appeared.
"You have brought together the components necessary to make a magic forge. Would you like more information, yes or no?"
Richter selected yes.
"Know this. The metal that is used to create a magic forge will determine the traits given to forging offensive and defensive items. You have supplied the metal bronze. Offensive trait, decreased weight. Defensive trait, decreased weight. Would you like to create a magic forge with the components you have supplied, yes or no?"
Not bad, Richter thought, but really not impressive. He selected no. Crom looked at him and said,
"Now you see why I wasn't in a rush to make a forge out of base metals, your lordship. Might as well move on to the rest so you can finally show us what you've brought."
Richter nodded and picked up the others in quick succession.
"You have supplied the metal iron. Offensive trait, increased durability. Defensive trait, increased durability. You have supplied the metal steel. Offensive trait, increased skill leveling with the skill relevant to that weapon. Defensive trait, increased skill leveling with the skill relevant to that armor. You have supplied the metal high steel. Offensive trait, increased maximum charges that would otherwise be gained from a soul stone. Defensive trait, increased camouflage."
Well, iron wasn't that impressive either, Richter thought. If increased durability could be applied to walls or defensive structures, then it might be useful, but otherwise it would be a waste. Steel could be impressive, though. It would make training a militia a lot easier and much faster. High steel would be great for training quick strike groups. Being able to use the magic powers of enchanted weapons more often and at the same time being able to hide more effectively, it screamed Spec Ops. Definitely a real contender. Richter called out each combination to Randolphus, who jotted down the statistics. As he saw his Chamberlain record the valuable information, it made him realize that one of the buildings he needed to have built was a library. He didn't have many books now, but it never hurt to plan for the future. He would also have to get Randolphus to bind his notes into a series of books. They could probably serve as an early history of the village. That thought made him realize that he should probably assign someone the task of being the village's historian. Why was there always so much to do?
"Okay, Crom," he said. "Are you ready?"
Crom's only answer were his nostrils flaring over and over. It was actually kind of impressive that he could do that, Richter thought. But the slow reddening of the dwarf's face made him realize that perhaps he had pushed this particular joke too far.
Even though he was master of the village, it wouldn't necessarily protect him from an irksome dwarf's oversized fists.
Richter pulled the first ingot out of his bag. It was moonstone. Holding both it and the core close to the anvil earned him a prompt.
"You have supplied the metal moonstone. Offensive trait. Increases both natural recharge rate of enchanted items and the amount of charges gained from using soul stones. Defensive trait. Decreased mana cost per item, cumulative per piece of armor."
"That's awesome!" Richter exclaimed.
"What?"
Crom and Randolphus asked together. Richter realized he hadn't told them what he had found.
"This is moonstone," he said, shaking the white metal slightly.
Crom nodded like that was obvious, impatient for Richter to share the perk. Randolphus just made a notation and held his pen ready to continue. "Offensive items get a bonus to natural recharge and soulstone recharge. That could come in useful, but listen to the defensive trait. There is a cumulative reduction in mana usage for each piece of armor worn. That could be huge." Crom wasn't so excited.
"Aye, I could see that being a boon to someone like yourself, your lordship. You seem blessed with high affinities in both weapons and magic."
Richter kept his face passive. A piece of advice he had gotten from Zetrix upon first arriving to the land was to keep his limitless ability to himself.
Apparently, an ability like that was extremely rare and could make him even more of a target than he already was. Even though he thought Crom was a good guy and his villagers were becoming like an extended family, Richter believed in playing things close to the chest. Crom continued on, unaware of Richter's silent reaction to his words.
I don't know if the benefit would be that great for most casters, though. As I'm sure your lordship already knows, most armor has a spell-casting penalty. Low-level spells might not be affected by the light armor you're wearing, but more complex spells require complicated gestures. Medium and heavy armor would be even worse. The only ones who could really use this trait would be mages that were also highly skilled in the type of armor they were wearing. The high skill level in light or medium armor would remove or lessen the penalty. Otherwise, I think you'd be wasting the trait. Most casters will only be able to wear cloth or leather armor.
Richter was always impressed by the transformation in Crom when he started talking about his trade. As irritable and hot-tempered as the dwarf could be, he certainly loved his vocation and treated it with respect. Those are good points, Richter said. But we aren't going to rule it out yet. Even if casters are only wearing leather or hide armor, an army of armored magicians that can cast more spells than their enemies would be a force to be reckoned with. Crom didn't argue, but it wasn't clear if that was because he conceded the point, or if he was just eager for his lord to move on to the next metal. Richter didn't keep him waiting. He pulled a shimmering silver ingot from his bag. You have supplied the metal Quicksilver. Offensive trait, increased attack speed. Defensive trait, increased movement speed. Richter told the dwarves and his chamberlain about the traits. He had a question, though. The increased speed is obviously useful, but the question is how much? I mean, if the increase in speed from Quicksilver was only 0.1%, but bronze gives a 50% decrease in weight, then I might actually choose the bronze. Crom nodded.
I understand, my lord. Me and the other smiths had the same question when we talked about this. I don't think we will know until we actually make the forge. No one here in the village has any lore that could guide us specifically as to the traits the forge will obtain. The one thing all the old stories agree on is that as the forge levels, the benefits from the traits increase.
Richter nodded. He brought out the next ingot. You have supplied the metal cobalt. Offensive items. Increased attack against alignment of your choice. Chosen at the time of item creation. Defensive items. Increased defense against alignment of your choice. Chosen at the time of creation. Crom finally smiled.
Well, this'll come in handy. Most goblins and orcs are negative alignment, and it'll make it much easier to crack some skulls.
The smith was looking off into the distance with a manic smile on his face. Richter could see him visualizing taking on a horde of green-skinned enemies single-handedly. Hold your horses, Richter said. Crom and Randolphus looked around confused. Richter groaned. Fucking idioms. I mean, slow down. We have one more metal to examine. I think you're going to like this, Crom. The smith's eyes widened.
You found mithril?
Richter's lips pressed together in annoyance. No, I didn't. Way to make what I found seem not as good. Kind of a dick move, man. Crom looked at him sheepishly. Richter shook his head in irritation. He pulled out the last ingot. It was completely clear and looked to be made out of dark green glass. You have supplied the metal Elementum. Offensive trait. Increased ability to damage magical shields. Defensive trait. Increased spell resistance. Type of resistance random.
Game on! Richter shouted.
If there was one thing that had really grinded his gears since coming to the land, it was fighting magic users. It was so irritating having to wear down a magical shield while your enemy fired back at you with impunity. He shared what he had found with the others. Crom begrudgingly agreed that the Elementum would be the right choice. Richter took one look at his smith's crestfallen face and added, I'm sure we will still be able to kill loads of orcs and goblins with this type of forge. And it'll be easier to kill their magi. Crom's eyes lit up, and he gave a gap-toothed grin at that.
Aye, my lord, I hadn't thought of that.
Richter smiled back and then turned to the anvil again. All of the other dwarves had stopped what they were doing and gathered around. While Richter had been testing each metal, other villagers had been walking by and picked up that something was afoot.